Well, so many lives were changed after Katrina, and so many lives were changed, after the recession in 2008 and 2009. Jobs disintegrated, others just atrophied. But for some, those times of change were the motivation to change their lives, in some ways to reinvent themselves. And that's what we're going to talk about this hour, changing and reinvention. Have you ever thought of it? It is scary, but it can be so rewarding. We are joined by three people who took that leap. Marie Rudd, an attorney for a small boutique defense firm in New Orleans and a single mother of two, found herself in need of a new home and a new job after Katrina. And Reed Stone and Sean Walker worked for a large ad agency after Katrina, among the enthusiastic young professionals who came to New Orleans to help rebuild. And they did, till the recession hit and the ad business became the early warning signal that the economy was about to tank. It was time to rethink their talents and skills and to open their own agency in the toughest economy in a generation. Yes, Katrina and a recession are mighty motivators, but I have to say that it is really guts ball to make changes like this. I applaud you. I do, and I cannot wait really to hear your stories, because I know there are people out there thinking, I don't need a recession. I just want a change, and it can happen. But it is scary. I'm going to start with Marie. Marie, Katrina hits.
Yes, it did. At that time, I lived in Lakeview. I had two small daughters, one in first grade, one in second grade. Life was great. I had a wonderful job as a defense attorney, working for a small boutique firm. And then all of a sudden, like everybody knows, the storm hit. I had 6 feet of water only because I was 3 feet above base level to begin with. And I found myself on the North Shore. And primarily I ended up on the North Shore because my ex-husband at the time also lived in Lakeview. He had lost everything. And had I moved to Houston where I had family, or Shreveport where I had family, my children wouldn't have seen their father. So I ended up on the North Shore, and I started doing what anybody would do. I started interviewing for jobs, and the kind of jobs that were available at that time wanted me to travel 4 days a week. And I said, you want me to travel 4 days a week? I've got two young daughters. I have 6 feet of water. I've got the SBA. I have FEMA. That's just not going to work. So I was very blessed and very fortunate to have some office space available to me. I set up shop, as attorneys call it. I hung a shingle. A huge leap of faith for me, because as I like to call myself, I'm a reluctant entrepreneur. I love the comfort of knowing a paycheck was coming, when it was coming, how much it was going to be, and what I had to spend it on. And that's not the life of an entrepreneur, as everybody in this room will be able to tell you as well. So
you had to learn the business of running a law firm.
Yes, ma'am. That is a whole different animal than just showing up and practicing law. And I, again, was blessed. It's funny how your past experiences and exposures bring you to a place where you're supposed to be. I actually have a marketing background in my undergrad, so I had some idea of what running a business should be like. I also knew that, you know, most of the time when we were in school, people say, before you start a business, you need a business plan, and you got to think about this and that. And when you're thrust into a situation like I was, I didn't have time to think about that. Which was probably another blessing, because had I thought about it, I would have run for the hills.
It could be too scary.
Absolutely.
Our two guys here, Reed Stone and Sean Walker, you're here for all the right reasons. You want to help this city not just survive, but flourish. You join this big, wonderful ad agency. Life is rocking and rolling. And then the bottom falls out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, a lot of people don't realize that when a recession finally hits, that there are so many other industries that have been feeling it months or even years up to that point. And that was kind of what happened in our situation, where we sort of saw the writing on the wall. And then all of a sudden, it was like, okay, let's really consider what would happen. And then sure enough, it did happen. And so we were just very fortunate to be able to have become friends while we were working at that agency. so that we could actually branch out and do this. And sure enough, the very next day, we were like, all right, you know, let's hit the ground running, because there were no jobs. There were no jobs, advertising, marketing. I mean, those had been gone. And so it was kind of, you know, sink or swim at that point.
So the two of you are like, you know, two good friends working both at the same time, don't have a job, and within 24 hours, let's join hands and form a company?
Well, some days we're better friends than others. Yeah.
Today, hopefully, is a good one.
Today's a good day. Today's a good day.
So how did you begin?
We were both seniors in college the year Katrina hit. And right when it hit, first off, I'm born and raised here. Reed grew up in Past Christian, so pretty much a New Orleanian as well. And so Katrina hit during our senior years in college, and we kept hearing all the experts say, you know, young professionals were already leaving the city before the storm, and that now that the storm had hit, we were going to be leaving in droves, never coming back. And it really made me mad, because they didn't give credit to anybody that was from here. And me and a lot of my friends had talked about, you know, we wanted to come back and be part of the generation that kind of defined the city and just made it better than it ever had been. And so we came back here, and we met each other at that at the other agency, and you know, been going since.
So and we're going to take a break in a second. You formed this company, and it was really one with a I keep saying it because I think it's so important, sort of with a social conscience.
Sure.
So you really thought about it. These are our skills. We're ad guys. We're talented, but let's think bigger.
Right. And, you know, the people have sort of these misconceptions about, you know, sort of what advertising people do on a daily basis. And the truth is, it's really not as Don Draper as even yeah, we would like it to be. But, you know, it's a lot of hard work. I mean, we spend 12, 16 hours a day either in front of the computer, in meetings, running around, pitching, creating. I mean, it's a lot of work. But we wanted to make sure that people knew that the world of advertising, the world of marketing, especially here in New Orleans, had changed. There's so many people with good hearts here. There's so many people with, you know, good causes, and we wanted to be one of those. We didn't want people to just think that, oh, we're advertising guys. We're just about the bottom line and whatnot. And so we put a social responsibility filter on everything that we did, and this is kind of before it became in vogue. So we were kind of taking a little bit of a chance at the time, but to the point that, you know, everything that we did had to have a secondary betterment portion of it. It had to either benefit the community. It had to instruct the person that was receiving it. You know, because we're going to interrupt your day with a message. Mm-hmm. It needs to be something. It needs at least entertaining, funny, instructive, help a greater cause. And so that was kind of basically the filter that we put on everything that we did. Every piece of work that came out had that filter on it.
Stay with us, everyone. We're going to continue our talk about reinventing yourself and two great examples. We'll be right back. Well, we are talking about sort of reinventing yourself. We've heard the stories of Marie Rudd and Reed Stone and Sean Walker, who at sort of pivotal moments in all of our history, whether it be Katrina or the economic downfall, did recreate themselves out of necessity, but there's some very happy things, and we're going to get to that. But I'd like to introduce Rebecca Conwell from Tulane, who is starting a new program to help people develop, and I love the word, encore careers. And you can probably have many encore careers.
Exactly.
Right. These are young people, but, I mean, people up in their 50s and 60s that want to change, too, can be encore career people.
That's the most logical fit, actually, for encore is someone in their 50-plus. Usually they do an encore in lieu of retiring. And so, you know, many of us in our 40s will start thinking about, well, I'm not feeling totally fulfilled in my job, mm-hmm. and I'd like to have more meaning. And some people do it through volunteerism. Other people might take an encore career defined by something that has social purpose, but you're getting paid. In today's economy, it's not necessarily realistic to retire like mm-hmm. the old days. And the encore.org was actually founded by Mark Friedman, who recognized early in his academic career that there was a lost economy from people who at the peak of their experience and knowledge leave and retire and remove themselves from the working environment. So he started Encore.org, which is a think tank that creates an environment for people to be able to do encores. So he's always looking for opportunities. In my fellowship, that's a partnership between Encore and Tulane University, is focused on creating a mini university with at Tulane that will help people repurpose their careers.
Wow, that's a wonderful word, repurpose, too. And you know, a tagline, not with people sitting in this room, but often we are hearing people, whether it's post-recession or whether it's just a new day, that people in their 50s and 60s are the first to be let go, whether they're overpriced or whatever the reason is. So they're not ready to retire. And so they might be looking for that very thing you're talking about. Gee, I always wanted to do X. So whether it is, whether the motivation is catastrophes like we've talked about, or just it's the new day in employment, very important that you bring something to the table. That's what you're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah. As these people are saying, and what were you thinking when you were listening to them?
Oh, you know, it's so exciting and very brave on their part. I think I'm in my Encore career, but my transition to that world was a little different. Mine was a yank the Band-Aid off moment. You know, I had been at Tulane University for 14 and a half years and very happy and had the luxury of doing a job that I every day couldn't imagine I was being paid to do it. You know, and so I was very happy, but I wanted a little bit more, and I was contemplating what that next move might be. And mine came with a phone call from a friend who said, I have a crazy idea. Come manage my political campaign. And that was my moment. I recognized it. On the other hand, the two, when I listened to their stories, I feel they're much braver than I was. Because, you know, I had an environment that just seemed to open for me, but they did it in the face of, you know, really difficult climate, you know, work climate.
Yes.
And so it takes a little more.
I'd like to ask both Marie and Reed and Sean. We're talking about it now where you're looking back and saying, you know, gee, we're so thrilled we did this. But how scared were you?
Oh my gosh. I was petrified. I never wanted to be a business owner. And it also required me to retool what I did, because in my early career, I was an insurance defense attorney, worked for large firms and then smaller firms. So basically, I worked for large companies and insurance adjusters as clients. Fast forward to what I do now, I work for people, and what I do affects their lives because I handle primarily mediation and family law, which is divorce and child custody and where my kids going to spend Christmas. And so I had to relearn law. And unfortunately, there's a lot of downtime when you start a new business, and that's what I did. I pored over the statutes related to family law. I just studied pleadings that other people had prepared so that I was ready.
And this is a happier type of law for you?
When people ask me the difference between what I used to do and what I do now, what I tell them is that I've never received a thank you note or a Mother's Day card from an insurance adjuster.
Oh, my God. Well, that says everything.
And just this week, I got chocolate-covered strawberries from a client because I was able to help her do something that was critical in her life. And so she... Part of the way she thanked me was to send me chocolate-covered strawberries, which were delicious.
So you landed on your feet, even though you got through the scary times, and you really do have a new world.
A very new world. One of the rewarding things about it, and one of the things I wouldn't go back and trade it for anything now, is that it came at a time when my children were young, and I never had to explain to somebody from, you know, first, second grade to now they're in high school, why I was leaving at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Because I was going to a play or I was going to a ball game or a practice or whatever the case may be. Now, that meant I had to make it up. I get to the office at 7:30 sometimes. I work till midnight sometimes, but
flexibility.
I have that flexibility. And it's priceless. It's priceless.
Okay, guys, tell me about how scared you were.
Let me tell you, there is nothing quite like seeing your bank account with like maybe 5 cents in it to really make you realize, wow, was this a mistake? But no, it's the key, and I think, and I would say that probably most everybody at this table here is when you take that fear and you turn it into motivation. You know, you're like, I'm not going to let this keep me down. I'm going to find a new way to do it. And what else is kind of interesting, and to your point, Marie, that you said, it's so funny. I have never learned so much so fast as when I took that step. You become a master at things and learning how to master things very, very quickly. I can write the Tim Ferriss 4-hour work week book here. but yeah, and so that was probably the wake up moment. But at the same time, it's, you know, all you can do is use it. And at that point, the great thing, you know, it's not necessarily hitting the bottom, but there's really nowhere else to go but up. And so you just use it as a motivating factor.
Stay with us, everyone. We're going to break for news, but we're going to come back and we're going to continue with Reed and Sean about their company now called Hero Farm. I love that name. Stay with us. Well, we're talking with people who took major leaps, I'm saying that, to restart their lives, recreate their lives. And as difficult and scary as it is, clearly the people we're talking to in this room, it has definitely been for the best. For Reed Stone and Sean Walker, working for a big ad agency, bad economy, thrust out on their own, living on 5 cents, but somehow making it. But part of it, would you say, of the fact that you are now 5.5 years old in your company, has been the element of your social responsibility?
Well, first off, you know, in advertising, I think we're pretty nuts, just because, you know, if you look at any survey, we rank right along with car salesmen and lawyers and not being trusted. And so,
and broadcasters.
Yeah. And so, you know, the guy that runs over your dog and tells you there's no Santa Claus, we're probably about right there with him. And so, you know, we wanted to evolve advertising into something a little more. And so a quote that we kind of go with is, in seeking happiness for others, you find it for yourself. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we wanted to make things to where we gave back. Because, you know, just working for the sake of getting a task done doesn't really do anything except check it off your list. And so we wanted to make all of our work be a part of something bigger than just ourselves. And so, as Reed was saying earlier, you know, we just try to make sure everybody we work with has an admirable mission of their own and provide some kind of benefit to their customers as well.
So who was your first, I mean, when you said, oh my gosh, we've opened our doors, is anybody there? Who walked in?
Well, there were a lot of small projects, mm-hmm. People that we had known just through networking. But the one, there was actually a home builder, a local home builder. And this is right in, I guess, middle, late 2009, when things were finally starting to come through. There was all this prospect of road home money. And
yes.
You know, there's a lot of talk, a lot of excitement. And so a home builder actually approached us and asked us to pitch them ideas. And so this was the first big pitch that we had out on our own. We didn't sleep literally for 3 days. There were pictures of us in coffee shops, just with sticky notes everywhere. We just took over. But we landed it and won it, and it was phenomenal. It was huge, huge, huge. And so that was definitely the point where we're like, okay, we're legit.
Right.
We've earned our stripes now.
Did you have an office, or were you working out of your homes?
Between home and coffee shop.
But home, okay. That's right. So now 5.5 years in, and tell us the name again, the name and why.
So we are Hero Farm, mm-hmm. Marketing and PR. Hero Farm basically was, let me backtrack a little bit. There is no harder task you will ever do than come up with a name for your own business. Mm-hmm. So we wanted something that was a little bit bigger than the names of the partners, something that said, you know, big, bold ideas, but, you know, down home creativity and, you know, maybe not excessive prices. And so Hero Farm is sort of the name that we landed on. We wanted something that said, you know, local, homegrown, organic, but big idea, big mm-hmm. result. So Hero and Farms kind of worked. Nice little balance there. And a lot of science went into this little 8 letters, but at least that's what we tell people anyway. But yeah, no, we probably went through 200 names before we landed on that one.
What point did you get an office?
We've been in our, I guess, a year into it.
Yeah, about a year.
So.
And do you have other people working with you?
We do. We have a couple of people that work in that are in they're working very hard in that office right now, thankfully. Yeah. And then we have two people that we contract with, and then we have an internship program that we've developed with Loyola and actually LSU. If there is any other project that requires some outside help, we'll bring in those people. Mm-hmm. So that way we can kind of keep, you know, overhead as low
but
as possible.
But a little bit like Marie, mm-hmm. you had to learn the business side of it. Weren't you the creative side?
Well, believe it or not, actually, I was the account management side. Sean was the copywriter. And so there's all these other things that go into it, design, you know, other facets of it, the web portions of it, the tech portions of it. And so we had to get really, really smart at that kind of thing very, very quickly. And so thankfully we were able to do it. And thankfully there was the internet So you know, that almighty teaching tool, and we were able to do it. And so yeah, it did. But it's fun though, because you know, being on the account management side, which is kind of where I had started on the strategy side, the fun is in the creative. That's kind of the thing that okay, there's yeah. my headliner. Oh, there's my, you know, piece of work that's actually playing or going live at this point.
Or my chocolate covered strawberries.
Mm-hmm. Or my chocolate covered strawberries, exactly. So
we're going to take another break. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about. So you're there. You're thinking, maybe I can do it, and these people are going to help us right after this. Well, we're listening to Marie Rudd and Reed Stone, Sean Walker, talk about really making major changes in their life. And I tell you what I'm hearing how happy you are. And that's, to me, the bottom line. You're making a living. You're helping a community in many ways. But you morphed. If that's an appropriate word. And I think for Rebecca Conwell, it's very exciting what you're talking about, that you are creating, you're in the process of creating, and that is the Encore Careers out of Tulane, but still you're creating it as you're creating it.
Yes.
Right. Go ahead.
Oh, well, so one of the wonderful things about being on campus at Tulane University is following the storm. I think it's important to note that the president and the board officially expanded the mission of the university beyond education and research to include service. Mm-hmm. And so the ethos on campus was established to require the undergrads to do service. And through that, many programs started to develop, and the Social Innovation Social Entrepreneur, they call SICE for short, program, developed, which created a minor. And so by being able to tap into the brilliance and what's already been taking place with undergrads, I mean, we've seen firsthand what happens when you empower thousands of undergrads mm-hmm. with an yes. intellect and the ability to make a difference. When we think about designing a program on campus to do the same thing for 50 plus mm-hmm. at the height of their careers and knowledge and experience, let's take and identify what's passionate. You know, we all have different buttons that are pushed that motivate us to do something out of our normal environment, whether it's going to Propeller and starting and launching your own nonprofit, or maybe it's volunteering, you know, in town. There's something that motivates us to do that. So wouldn't it be fun to have a program, it will look like this in some form, where we take people and help them identify what their passion is, and then imagine that as a big circle. And then let's focus on what you're good, what has been your career and experience and your knowledge. And imagine that as a big circle. And that overlap mm-hmm. is your possible encore career. And so we're looking at designing a program that will tap into that kind of experience and then give people the courage to maybe take that step.
And that is a very important word. It is courage. It is, you know, I call it guts ball, but that's bad. Courage.
It's scary. And many, many people work their entire career saying, I want more. And they fail to be able to identify what more looks like. And you have stories all the time where somebody identifies it. It's a big moment. And they just identifying it becomes the courage. And the adrenaline allows them to move forward. But I had an amazing conversation with a couple at the taco truck one night. And they moved here from the Northeast. He had had a flag store that was really well known on an academic campus. I don't remember which one. He was having this moment, and he wanted more. And in with the support of his wife, he sold his business and ended up in New Orleans managing a charter school.
Oh my gosh.
He spent his entire life managing this bookstore, and now he's in New Orleans managing a charter school. And imagine that. I mean, we've become this great attraction for, mm-hmm. for people who want to make a difference. And that's the perfect example of an encore career, is identifying, you know, I have all this experience I can bring to the table. How can I make things better using it?
Better using it, and everybody who's listening saying, but we still have to make a living. And
you
that's
do.
Part of it, too.
And that's part of what the definition of an encore career is getting paid.
I'm watching you all shake your head. Join in. What do you think?
Well, and you know, Marie mentioned that it's about people, and I think mm-hmm. you did as well. It's shifting
Absolutely.
Your focus from we get disconnected from our careers and the paycheck that magically arrives in our bank account, and you kind of just go about the motions of making your bosses and managers happy. And when you go to work for yourself and you're that person, it is about the people.
Well, and that's one of the things that I realized early on practicing in family law. You know, I hadn't been exposed to it earlier in my career, but I realized very quickly that our legal system really wasn't geared towards helping families going through divorce or helping a couple figure out custody and visitation issues. So part of what I've done is I've educated myself and I've trained extensively in areas of mediation and collaborative law to help people come together and try to resolve their differences so that they can hopefully go forward and co-parent effectively. Mm-hmm. And it kind of brings you back to exactly what you're talking about, and that is realizing that what I really do every day is I get up and I get paid to help people, mm-hmm. and to make a mm-hmm. difference in their lives. And that is a completely different thing than what I did early in my career.
Wow. Is it feasible that you will, again, do another change in your life? I mean, you all are young.
Yeah, it is feasible. Right now, I've been doing this for almost 10 years now.
Wow, well, that's great.
Yeah, it's hard.
You never know. Well, that's another whole show, you know, chapter three.
Yeah, you know, my kids are going to be in college soon.
You never know. I want to thank each and every one of you. You inspire, very much so, all of you. And we're going to get you back, Rebecca, as that project, Encore, really solidifies. And we'll be hearing a lot about that.
I would enjoy that.
Thank you all very, very much. Everyone, stay with us. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Just want to thank all my wonderful guests today, the people who reinvented themselves. We're cheering you on, and you are inspiring. We'll see you tomorrow.